Well, happy Mother's Day. And thank you, Kristen, for the beautiful flowers. I don't see her. There she is. Okay. Yeah. Wait, there you are. Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. And thank you all for coming and sharing this special day with us today. I loved what it said in the Daily Word about mothers. This holiday is one that is dedicated to mothers and what they do, and I liked all the things that it said about it. The holiday actually started about 100 years ago. There was a woman who dedicated a day in honor and celebration of her mother, and then was an activist. She wanted it to be a recognized day, went on to see it become a holiday. I think it was like 1912, somewhere around there. So it's been a holiday to celebrate, to honor all that moms do. The words in here, I think, are fortitude. Think about it yourself. You know, it takes fortitude, it takes commitment, it takes devotion, patience. Goodness knows you have to have a lot of patience. And unconditional love. Those are beautiful, true attributes of mothers. So I would like to ask all of the moms to please stand. We would like to recognize and honor all that you are and have given. And thank you. Well, what is a mother? As I thought about that, I began to think about, well, is it, you know, maybe it's just biological. No, it can't be just biological. You know, and it just kept expanding, so I got some help. I went to Webster's Dictionary first. There were a number of, oh, you know what? I need to share these. This is great. I'm sorry. I have some quotes, things that mother will not say. So hold on to the definition. I'll be back to that. I found this on the internet this morning from Chris Chenoweth, Sunday Funnies. Things mom will never say. How on earth can you see the TV sitting so far back? Yeah, I used to skip school a lot too. Just leave all the lights on. It makes the house look more cozy. Cheery, sorry, yeah. Let me smell that shirt. Yeah, it's good for another week. If you've had boys, that one's... Yes. Go ahead and keep that stray dog, honey. I'll be glad to feed and walk him every day. Well, if Timmy's mom says it's okay, that's good enough for me. The curfew is just a general time to shoot for. It's not like I'm running a prison around here. I don't have a tissue with me. Just use your sleeve. And finally, don't bother wearing a jacket. The wind chill is bound to improve. Yeah, you won't hear that probably. So the definitions of what a mom is. Webster has a number of definitions, but the first one is a female who has borne offspring. And yes, certainly, you know, certainly. But then, you know, I think about moms like some of the ones that we read about in the news that do terrible things to their children. Like, well, okay, that doesn't really make you a mother. Biologically, yeah, but okay, so that's not completely it. But it's one possibility. Another is, it's when you say mother, a definition is one's own mother. We have various names, you know, for my mom called her mom mother. I called my mom mama. My kids called me mom. Yeah. Just all kinds of names. One's own mother is mother. It can also be mother-in-law, stepmother, adoptive mother, foster mother. And I'm going to go see my good friend, Donna. She and I have been friends since the 70s. Karen knows her. Her daughter, Dory, when I first started hanging out with Donna was 13, so Dory calls me mom number two, you know, so I don't really fit into adoptive or, you know, but kind of. So we have an expanded view of mother. And then finally, the last one that I chose to highlight is qualities characteristic of a mother as maternal affection. You know, we just read off some of those qualities that were in the Daily Word. So now we're beginning to see that mother, the very definition of mother, isn't necessarily gender specific. We don't have to be female to be a mother. I, of course, went to Revealing Word, and Charles Fillmore had this to say. There wasn't a definition just for mother. There was divine motherhood. So what he said about that is, divine motherhood is the brooding, nourishing element of divine mind, or God, in which spiritual ideals are brought to fruition. Certainly that encompasses, you know, a lot that we've already talked about, our children, a spiritual ideal, and we bring them to maturity as best we can. But it's more. It can be more. So as we think about mothers, we might consider a variety of mothers. Certainly when we think of mothers, one of the things that came to me first was Mother Earth and Mother Teresa. Those two, Mother Earth, it's pretty obvious that Native Americans honor the earth, because the earth is our sustenance, is our very nourishment for everything that lives. It's pretty important. People like Mother Teresa isn't a biological mother, but she nourished and showed unconditional love for a lot of different people. Two that we're going to focus on today, though, are women that one is called the mother of new thought, and another is called the mother of unity. And I'd like for you to keep those characteristics in mind, and then that last definition of what Charles said in Revealing Word about divine motherhood as we look at this. The woman who is considered the mother of new thought is a woman named Emma Curtis Hopkins. Remember that name? I've mentioned it a time or two. Emma Curtis Hopkins must have been a phenomenal woman. I wish that I could go back in time just a little bit to be able to sit in on one of her classes. She's also called the teacher of teachers. She was born, I think it said 1849, and she died in 1925. She was actually a mother. She married and had a son. Before that, though, she had gone to Woodstock Academy in Connecticut, and it was before the age of 15, so apparently she was 14 years old. She went to this academy and did so well, not only was she a student, but they invited her to be, because of her genius, it said, she was given a place on faculty as a teacher. Brilliant woman, brilliant. Then she grew up, she got married, she had this child. She heard about Mary Baker Eddy. And we know that Mary Baker Eddy was the founder of Christian Science. Emma Curtis Hopkins was intrigued by what she read, by what she knew, and worked out a deal with Mary Baker Eddy to come and take the lessons and then pay her back for the schooling to be a practitioner once she finished the schooling. And that worked out. She became a practitioner under Christian Science and was hired by Mary Baker Eddy to be kind of on the editorial staff for a while. But I've read other accounts of her, and she apparently kept reading and kept incorporating more and more into what she read and expanding her view of the way she thought things were, so that then Mary Baker Eddy let her go because she was getting outside of what the parameters were of this Christian Science movement. So Emma Curtis Hopkins started her own seminary. She started her own school, if you will. And she had people coming. She taught all of the major New Thought leaders. She taught and ordained the Fillmores. She taught and, I believe, ordained the religious science, the divine science leaders. She taught, I don't know if she ordained her, I don't think so, but she taught Emily Cady. So all these people came and learned under Emma Curtis Hopkins. Some of the sources that I had said that her teachings were very powerful. They were inspirational. They were vivid. They were inspiring. She did a great work. Her writing, not as much. Her writing was, one source said that it was kind of fragmented and not nearly as powerful as the teachings. But she was a gifted teacher. It says that she was instrumental to the development of the New Thought movement. hence mother of new thought. So here's a woman who, yes, has given birth and has a son, and yet what she created, what she gave birth to that the world knows her for is new thought. Myrtle Fillmore. Myrtle, we know quite a bit about. Goodness knows I've talked about her a lot. Apparently, she was, at an early age, less than satisfied with the traditional teachings of religious teachings of her family. I think they were Methodist, and she was, you know, she followed all the requirements that were expected of her as a daughter of, I don't know if he was a minister or a lay leader, but anyway, whatever. He was in the service. She did all that and yet didn't accept them. And I found this quote by her. "I found my dear ones did not have an understanding of God who ruled in their lives, which satisfied me. My mother was a very spiritual woman. She always kept the principles of right and wrong before us by her own example, but she accepted the church creed and had such a devotional spirit that she felt that if her God saw fit to punish or do any of the many things that were attributed to God, he must have reason for it, and it was all right. I marvel that my wonderful mother, who loved so devotedly, could have a God who might punish or take the lives of his children." So we can see from this that even at a young age, she had a whole different idea of what God was. She had a different sense of the order of things and was not afraid to hold on to that belief. She did grow up and became a teacher. I think first she was a teacher in Clinton, Missouri, and her health was bad. She came from a family of people who were traditionally, kind of genetically, it seemed, unhealthy. And her health got bad. She went to Denison, Texas for healing, and it was there that she met Charles. They liked each other. They were in reading groups and so forth, and they began, she went back to Clinton, I think, and was taught. They corresponded, and then at some point then he asked her to marry him, and she did. And she went with him to, I think it was Colorado. They ended up having three sons altogether. After the two sons, I believe they moved back to Kansas City. And around that time, she was diagnosed with a terminal illness. She was given months to live. They said that she, it was called consumption back then. We know it as tuberculosis. And like, they thought about going somewhere else that would be more beneficial to her health. But the guidance I think Charles got, maybe Myrtle did too, was to stay there. That was where their path was to be. So they stayed. They went to a lecture by a man named E.B. Weeks. E.B. Weeks was yet another student of Emma Curtis Hopkins. And in that lecture, you've heard this story a million times, I'm sure, Myrtle heard the phrase that resonated within her so powerfully that it changed her life, and we wouldn't be sitting here if it hadn't. The phrase was, "I am a child of God, and therefore I do not inherit sickness." And she was so stricken with this concept and so moved by it that then she took it in and she began to meditate and pray every day on that. She and there are places you can read about what she did. She went in and blessed her organs and thanked them for the very life and vitality that they were and that they had. She apologized to her body for thinking less of it than what was true with a capital T. And in a couple of years, she was healed. She was fine. Charles saw what was happening to his wife, and so he began this meditation stuff and began to see that he was getting prophetic dreams, and he began a process of restoring a withered leg. He'd had an ice skating accident as a child and hurt the hip dislocation, I think, and it was really bad. And so one leg was significantly shorter and less developed than the other leg. He had to wear like a brace and then all kinds of stuff to be able to walk. Throughout his life, he continued to work on the leg such that when he finally died, it was nearly the same length as the other one. I think he had a lift in his shoe, but otherwise was able to walk without even a cane. So these principles, this idea that Myrtle heard when she heard E.B. Weeks, who had been taught by Emma Curtis Hopkins, when she nurtured that, when she just embodied it and was a mother to that idea, unity was born. I want to read what she said about her experience of healing. She said, "From the moment I perceived the healing law, I could not let my neighbors alone. If there was anything the matter with them, it had to be put aright. They had to know that there was a better way. I did not do this meddlesomely. No one objected if the pain left him and he became perfectly well. In fact, our neighbors got so interested in healing that they would not let me alone, and our parlors were filled nearly every morning." So this idea that came into her, I think of it as like a seed. It just germinated, stayed there, developed, and she mothered it and then began to share it. It became, with her husband, it became unity, and here we are today. So we have Emma Curtis Hopkins, the mother of New Thought. We have Myrtle Fillmore, mother of Unity. I like to think again of the metaphysics, that divine motherhood. Remember, it said it was the brooding, nourishing element of divine mind or God in which spiritual ideals are brought to fruition. So now, as we think about how that might apply for us and in us, we see, again, it doesn't have anything to do with gender. We can be mothers. We can have a divine spark. We can have an idea that we can lay hold of and protect and nourish and bring out into the world. I found all kinds of things about mothers, so sharing a bunch of them with you. One of my favorite books, I keep telling you this is a favorite book, and yet it is yet another one, is called The Prophet. Anybody read some of it? Yeah. This man, Khalil Gibran, was born in 1883, so he's considered a mystic. He was born in Lebanon. His writings are very powerful. The Prophet is about what the prophet spoke. So the first chapter kind of explains who this prophet is. And it seems that this prophet knew that he was going to be leaving. And the people that he lived with did not want him to leave. So they said, well, before you go, then tell us, about, and then they kept speaking about the different things. So if you look at the table of contents, it'll say on love, on marriage, on children. And so hence the title On Mothers, which is where that came from. But as you listen to what he says about children, keep in mind, if you would, that divine motherhood idea. "And a woman who held a babe against her bosom said, 'Speak to us of children.' And he said, 'Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you, for life goes not backward, nor tarries with yesterday. You are the bows from which your children, as living arrows, are sent forth. The archer sees the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with his might that his arrows might go swift and far. Let your bending in the archer's hand be for gladness, for even as he loves the arrow that flies, so he loves also the bow that is stable." Isn't that beautiful? I think it's just... We can be those bows. We can be the ones who send out the living arrows in the form, certainly, of our children. And we can also be the bows for these wonderful divine ideas. And I think it's important to remember that to have the best effect, to have the most power, to have it come out, to manifest in a way that is the highest and best, we need and want to remember the archer. We need and want to remember the power behind all of this, that Christ, that divine, that spirit, that God, whatever you want to call it, that is the truth of our being, that guides and directs and fuels and nourishes us. We have an opportunity, certainly, to be parents to our children, and that never stops. I mean, my son is 40, and it's just, I expect to be his mom and guidance, whether he takes it or not. less and less as the years go, but always be there as a sounding board. Always be there. We can always be mothers, and we can always be mothers to these things that are ours to do. Emma Curtis Hopkins had a thing to do. She had something that was her passion, and she gave it all that she had, her entire life, to bring about this training, this teaching of new thought and the principles that it encompassed. Myrtle Fillmore had a thing that she experienced and then had to share, and it was above and beyond the children that she physically brought into the world, but this thing that had happened to her, she did the same thing. We can do that too. As we listen, as we take time in stillness to find out what is our direction, what is our guidance, so that we can be the bows, then we have a chance to manifest. The last thing I wanted to share with you is something I thought is just beautiful. This is written from the perspective of two babies, twins, that are still in the womb. In a mother's womb were two babies. One asked the other, "Do you believe in life after delivery?" The other replied, "Why, of course, there has to be something after delivery. Maybe we're here to prepare ourselves for what will be later." "Nonsense," said the first. "There is no life after delivery. What kind of life would that be?" The second said, "I don't know, but there will be more light than here. Maybe we'll walk with our legs and eat from our mouths. Maybe we'll have other senses that we can't even understand now." The first replied, "That's absurd. Walking is impossible, and eating with our mouths, ridiculous. The umbilical cord supplies nutrition and everything we need. But the umbilical cord is so short, life after delivery is to be logically excluded." The second insisted, "Well, I think there is something, and maybe it's different than it is here. Maybe we won't need this physical cord anymore." The first replied, "Nonsense. And moreover, if there is life, then why has no one ever come back from there? Delivery is the end of life, and in the after delivery, there is nothing but darkness and silence and oblivion. It takes us nowhere." "Well, I don't know," said the second, "but certainly we will meet Mother, and she will take care of us." The first replied, "Mother? You actually believe in Mother? That's laughable. If Mother exists, then where is she now?" The second said, "I'm getting goosebumps all up and down my legs." The second said, "She is all around us. We are surrounded by her. We are of her. It is in her that we live. Without her, this world would not and could not exist." Said the first, "Well, I don't see her. So it's only logical that she doesn't exist." To which the second replied, "Sometimes when you're in silence and you focus and you really listen, you can perceive her presence and you can hear her loving voice calling down from above." So let's take time now to become silent and to listen. I invite you, if you haven't already, to gently close your outer eyes. Turn your attention, if you would, to your breath, to your breathing. We focus in on the experience of the breathing, of the breath, how it feels as we draw air into our bodies, how it feels as we release that breath. We breathe and we allow that breath to deepen and to slow. And we find that our bodies respond by relaxing, by letting go. And we keep that attention on the breath. We breathe in and out. And we create a stillness. Our bodies are still as we breathe. And our minds slow down because we're focusing on breath. We become quiet. We become still. We become open, receptive. We put away any agendas that we might have. What silence might be, might feel like, and we just breathe. Our eyes are closed, so our outer vision is paused. And our inner vision is just focused on breathing. We might become aware of some gratitude, a feeling inside us, a feeling of safety, all is well, of gratitude. And when we put our attention on the word gratitude, we can find that we have many things that pop into our heads, maybe. Because today is Mother's Day, gratitude is for our moms is one of them. But we are grateful. We're grateful for all that motherhood encompasses. Grateful for all that our own mothers have done and given. Grateful for the experiences that we, if we are mothers, have been able to experience because of our children. We breathe. And we become aware of a joy. Joy that has really nothing to do with outer. Joy that comes from the core of us. We are naturally joyful beings because we are spiritual beings. And as we allow it, that joy radiates out. As we heard the words of Myrtle Fillmore in her joy as she wanted to share her experience with the world, we can find joy in sharing who and what we are. This joy that comes from our core is to be manifested. It is to be outpictured. It is to be shared. And in this quiet, we experience love. Love that has no bounds. Love that has no particular definition. Love that just is. And when we sit in silence in this manner, when we sit without agenda, when we sit open and receptive, we find that love is able to come into and through and as us. We find that love can outpicture, can manifest in beautiful ways. And as it does so, we find a richness, a satisfaction that we may never have experienced had we not allowed it. On this day, we sit, we are silent, we are joy, we are love. We take a few moments in silence to simply be, to be joy, to be love, in the silence. We are grateful. We are grateful for the awareness of the never-ending love and support and guidance of our Creator. We are grateful for the connection, for the knowing that we can tune into this at any time, in any place. We are grateful for the way this connection outpictures. Grateful for the love in our lives, grateful for the many blessings that we enjoy, the relationships that we have, grateful for our families, and grateful for the possibility of creating that which is uniquely ours to create. Grateful for the awareness that we can manifest a divine idea that is strictly ours. And with the support, the foundation, the power, and the presence of our Creator, it is made whole. And so we complete this time, this time of contemplation and prayer, being very grateful, grateful for our mothers, grateful for love, grateful for God. So in gratitude and in love, we come together to affirm the prayer that Jesus Christ taught us, our Lord's Prayer. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not in temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.